Once, 1, 2, 3, now won't you play with me?
Hey, hi, hello, everyone. Welcome to Blind Bargains Cast, episode 1, 2, 3. Which is different than 3, 2, 1.
No, contact. That's different. I remember. Well, there's that. No, I'm thinking Sesame Street, right? Low, middle, high. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, right.
There was.
Oh, yeah. And then the other one you did the other day. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not even going to try. Not even going to try.
No.
We got some cool stuff coming up here. You know, you may have heard about a little. Well, he uses the word kerfuffle. I like that word. Kerfuffle.
I like the word kerfuffle. Yes, I agree.
Marty over at Blindfold Games. So we brought Marty back on this week to talk a little bit about what exactly happened with that whole situation and the App Store. And yes, Blindfold Games are safe, and we will hear more about that later on. And also talk about some of the upcoming games that he has planned, some music stuff for you, Joe, in that. So might be some,
ooh,
yeah.
Okay. Rhythm-based games.
I think he already has it. Well, he has over 80. It's crazy. So definitely glad to have him back on. So that'll be a little bit later in the show, along with what is that sound, Joe?
It's something in the air. And I don't mean a Phil Collins kind of thing. No, I'm sorry. But we'll have something really unique in, well, it might give you nightmares, in the last word. It's like post-Halloween. Also, of course, we've got some interesting conversations to happen in Sound Off. A really quick tip, because now it's live, and some interesting things going on there as far as something that we've talked about before. In fact, something Jay has asked me about a lot, if it's working or not. Well, now it is working, and we'll talk a little bit about that.
And if I ever get back home again, I can try it out.
That's true.
That's why I'm
saying. We can get back home soon. As you can hear, Jay is once again in a hotel room of some kind.
Keep bouncing around.
You've been in a hotel room now, what, for almost 2 weeks?
Yeah, somewhere. I've been bouncing around. It was a convention to Jersey, to Texas convention. Hey, Texas, that was lots of fun. And then back here to a different hotel in New Jersey, kind of bouncing around. Oh, there's turkey coming up, so I'll be home very soon for some turkey.
Priorities. You know, some people have got to get their priorities back in order, and some would say Google needs to do that as far as that's concerned with accessibility. In the case of Android, a lot of people have always wondered why access works the way it does. Well, interestingly enough, Google is trying to put the genie back in the bottle by cracking down on accessibility and telling a bunch of app developers that if they're using the accessibility APIs and some of the system level stuff in a way that's not helping the disabled, well, then they need to explain why or explain how they're helping the disabled, or they could find themselves on the outs within 30 days on the Google Play Store.
This is a class of apps. A lot of these are what you might call assistance apps. These are types of apps that honestly give some of the power to Android in kind of a backdoor way, and perhaps not what Google was intending. Obviously not what Google was intending. So apps that you might have heard of, such as Tasker, there's one for Google Voice.
LastPass
does this for passwords. And what they do is they actually will look for password fields. Because if you're a screen reader, right, you will know when a password field is coming up. Well, LastPass say, hey, this might be a thing for us as well. We could latch on to when a password field exists. There's others, one called Auto Voice for that works a lot with Google Home, and you can do some pretty fancy advanced stuff. Tasker is another one that many of you might have heard of. So some pretty popular apps, especially Tasker, with accessibility. And so yeah. I guess where do you come down on this? I mean, some of these apps are really useful. Should Google kind of change the rules, or should they clamp down here, or is there a middle ground?
I think that it's interesting to go so far down the Android road and then kind of pull the car over in such a way that some app developers may be threatened or their livelihoods just terminated. Like LastPass is like, we don't know what we'll do. This is really going to mess us up bad because we rely on this.
They have an iOS version though, right?
Right. But if you say that your install base is higher on Android than iOS, because, you know, iOS, there's a default. There's always Keychain and something else getting the ability to.
And they aren't able to have the same integration as they do on Android because of this.
So I understand what Google is trying to do. And I understand the developer situation as well. What I was really concerned about was the way the press and the media started to spin this. Like, there's a couple of articles that we have here. One of them that's like, you know, your favorite Android app is about to be bricked because of accessibility. And it was, I mean, really, really dark, the comments that were coming out of this.
Why did you read the comments?
I know. But I learned so much about people in these kinds of situations when an accessibility issue comes to the mainstream and Ars Technica and The Verge and Engadget start posting stuff about it.
Yep.
You're going to see a lot of people who ironically are probably, you know, wearing, they're probably wearing glasses that would leave indents in their nose because they're probably 6 foot thick, you know, glasses on their faces, making these comments about accessibility. It just gives us an idea of just what we're facing sometimes when having to present ourselves as well as what we use to the mainstream at large.
And accessibility apps, I mean, just to frame this, accessibility apps, of course, are not the problem, but they've become perhaps a bit of the victim here because, you know, like, oh, that's the problem, the accessibility apps, because that's what Google is clamping down on. Well, Google is perhaps clamping down on an ideal that they've had all along, but perhaps, I'm not sure if the policy is new or if it was just never enforced.
That, I believe the latter a little bit.
And it could be some of that, you know, and there's some parallels. If you're an app developer, going back to, say, writing programs for Windows or even the Mac, and because you can still do it without the Mac App Store. When you write a program, you can put it up on your website. You can put it wherever you want and people can download it. You're not really locked down by very many rules that anybody would enforce on your app. Where if you're developing for an app store, Android or iPhone, or even other similar app stores, you are kind of beholden to the rules that Apple and Google will put down on you, which they changed. Obviously, there's a parallel to Marty's situation that we'll talk about a little bit later, where Apple changed a rule and then somehow got applied to him. So these are people's livelihoods. And if you spend all, you invest years and months of your time developing an app and you expect a certain feature to be there, and then, oh, by the way, Google is going to pull it out under the rug. Yeah, I'd be mad. I would not be happy at this.
Yet we benefit. So I'm torn because some of these things will make our lives easier. But at the same time, is it wrong for Google to do this in a ham-fisted fashion that some people who make YouTube videos who've been demonetized feel very strongly about the way that Google approaches them? But I mean, how do you serve that bad news? I mean, you could give it with turkey dinner and people will still be like, hey, wait a minute, where's dessert?
It would have gotten out anyway if Google just would have, if they would have just pinged a couple of the developers and told them, no matter how Google announced it, it would have gotten out.
Sure.
Anyway.
It's
going
to go down badly. It's very interesting time. We'll have to see what happens moving forward.
Definitely. And maybe there's a middle ground.
Well, that, but it's also nice to see that Google's talking accessibility, maybe not in the way that we thought they would, but there's a lot going on between the TalkBack betas, some of the stuff that's going on in Oreo. And so it's going to be very interesting to hear Google going forward, especially since I read a review about the Pixel Buds. I'm afraid it wasn't very good, JJ. So don't pre-order the
Pixel Buds. I wasn't going to. I'm not a Buds
guy. I know you weren't.
Right,
I know. So, I just thought I would bring it back up.
Well, if you
I read that on sound Twitter, off, by the way.
I was going to say, if you want to sound off about any of these things, or even if you want to tweet us at Blind Bargains, you can now be twice as detailed.
Twice as verbose.
Now with many of you, twice as verbose. And now with many of the Twitter clients that all of us use, I use Chicken Nugget is what I use from Accessible Apps on Windows. And I like it. I think it's worth the $15, which
TW Blue also updated. A lot of the old, I think somebody even mentioned the Cube. I can't believe that. somebody brought up like Quitter, you know. It was like, oh, I remember Quitter. It was like a big
Chicken Nugget before it was Chicken Nugget. I mean, it was a long
ago. What I think was really funny was that Twitter iOS updated like a few days later, and their release note in iOS was voiceover users can now use 280 characters. That was the actual note for the Twitter update, which I thought was just.
And I was trying to figure that out. Funny. Was there a bug that voiceover users couldn't do it and other people could? Is that what happened?
That's what I was trying to figure out, but it was true. You could dictate to it all you want or type in something, but you were at the old character limit. Now it's no longer the case, but Also, what I think is really interesting is the people who decided to test this out by writing nonsense or gibberish or 275, emoji and longer characters' names. So if you had a name that you wanted to use but couldn't before, you could actually use up to 50 characters on your Twitter name. This is nowhere near as bad as when Facebook said you could write a novel in your post. Remember that character limit. Yeah. Oh gosh, did they ever. So this is still not horrible. It didn't break the experience horribly for me. I kind of like it.
No, I think I wouldn't go much further than 280, but I do like that certainly. And a lot of people I think are being good, at least so far. They're figuring out, not every tweet has to be 280 just because you're allowed to be 280, and we'll figure that out ourselves too. We're kind of talking about, all right, how much do we want to put? I don't think I'm going to increase. We wouldn't want a 280 character headline, but maybe we can put a little more about the podcast when we do that, or when we post other things like our Blind Bargains holiday ad thing coming out hopefully very soon. So we can talk a little more about things like that. Well, we'll experiment and we'll see what happens. Did you see the tweet that got passed around? My favorite was, wow, those people that are so excited about Twitter having 280 character posts now, wait till they discover books.
Yeah, that was really cute. I thought that was funny. People were posting like the beginning of Terminator 2, the Judgment Day speech. I saw clips from famous movies in there, lines from Star Trek 2, Wrath of Khan, Doctor Who speeches. So a lot of people were really super creative with how they did that kind of thing. Even some Game of Thrones tweets were really cool. But I think it's interesting because I woke up just this morning at the time of recording to see that people were on Twitter being all ecstatic about a product that we've already been using for 5 months. That's right. Seeing AI has come to the UK, Australia, several countries, except Ireland for some reason, from what I was reading.
Is that a Brexit thing?
I guess. That's really it's interesting.
It's there now.
But for those of you who've written in on Twitter or sent us emails or tried to contact us in many different sundry ways to ask us, when is it coming to the UK? It's there.
As run
to
the App Store.
Well, you never know. We might have heard something from Microsoft. Anything's possible. Right,
exactly.
But it is available.
This is one of those you wonder why it wasn't in the first place. Like, what was holding that back? Was it on?
I don't know. Maybe servers.
The barcode thing is the only thing I can think of, because barcodes are sometimes a little more country dependent.
That's true too. And somebody was saying that there were some barcodes that weren't in there. Certain types of products.
Oh yeah, they don't. I mean, no barcode program is going to have everything. Actually, why don't we'll skip that one and come and we'll skip one down to segue here then, as I'm talking internally to Joe on the air. Barcodes there. This is a big update now for that. We had there was an ID made update a little while ago.
So this is really funny. Stanley sent in this email about Envision updating the Galaxy to version 3.0, and I actually, for just no real reason, I was scanning something and I thought, I hadn't looked to see if there's an update. I actually had this update like a day or two before because they had actually uploaded it to the servers before I knew when it was coming. I was like, when did this come out? I had no idea. This update takes a little bit of time to download, like all of them. You will have to turn your unit on and off twice. So it'll actually instruct you to do so. Once when you do that, it will go fairly quickly with the actual update once when it installs. One of the things I'll say, besides all this stuff that JJ has in front of him that he'll list in a moment, it is a little better at reading percentages and fractions in your cooking instructions, which was something it was having problems with really badly.
Sometimes it's little things.
Yeah. So it's not listed here, but oh my gosh, it does incremental reading a little bit. It was frustrating when you didn't know how many cups of water.
Exactly.
It was also frustrating.
There's a lot of different ways you can write those.
Sure. Oh, sure. But it was also frustrating when you would boot the thing and then you would get Wi-Fi connected right after you scan something, because you just wanted to fire it up, scan something.
And now you'll get the Wi-Fi strength as excellent or good or fair or poor.
And you get a little thing that kind of a loud sounder that goes off to let you know that you're connected to Wi-Fi rather than it interrupting the flow of speech when you're scanning.
Some new databases that are being supported, one called EVA or EVA, I guess, modified inventory and browse modes, and support for HTTPS, which that's I mean, we switched over. That's needed, because that's where most websites, we flipped Blind Bargains to that about a year ago, because, well, there's really not a good reason not to use HTTPS anymore. I'm sure somebody will come up with one, but in 99% of the cases, you want to be as secure as possible. So that is good. Yeah, so 3.0, the latest update for the ID Mate Galaxy. Another update for the Braille Sense Polaris. We feel like we've been saying this a lot.
And yeah, it seems like Christmas is full of updates.
Yeah. The third one since it's been released. So that's good that they've been pushing out lots of updates in just a few months. This one has fixes for creating and receiving email, word processor, more consistency with the Braille Sense and Android, improved access to, hey, I could use this here, to web portals at airports and hotels. And sometimes those are a little funky, so that's good to have. And you don't want to be locked out if you're going to be traveling from hotel to hotel to hotel. That'd be good. Oh, by the way, if you happen to have one of the older Braille Senses, we got an email from him as well saying that Dropbox works again. So don't really know what was broke. I think it was something in there. I don't know. It was something deep in the weeds. But whatever it is, it resolved itself. So if you're using Dropbox in an older Braille Sense, you can use it again. And you can send me lots of files.
You could also send him huge audio files. No, don't. Audacity 2.20 is available and working better for screen readers who want to be able to interact with that particular ability to edit audio and the like. This comes from Top Dot over there, Dean Martineau. This is kind of nice for those who are wanting to do something other than some of the other things you could have done in the past for, you know, sound recorder or something like that. So Audacity, which is something I use actually on our tips. When I go to do tips on my own, I'll record in Audacity. And it's nice to know that this is working a little bit better for screen readers since it's open source. And a lot of people use that in podcasting land, especially in the mainstream.
Yeah, Audacity is big. Of course, some of us are still stuck on SoundForge. Of course, Reaper is big and a huge community around that, but a little more challenging for some.
Some of those updates have been breaking things from what I was reading Patrick talking about. What was it? SoundForge is acting weird.
He was also talking about using SoundForge 7 for a second. So
that's true.
That's totally like true. 2000. This is
where he'll actually break edit and jump in and say something very smart that I don't know about, and then correct.
That sounds about right.
That's what Patrick does.
Basically, I use old versions of SoundForge because newer ones suck. That's really all that was. Oh, and Reaper broke and got fixed.
Well, one of the things that we have coming up is more talk about things like the iPhone X, as well as some weird audio that will probably make your skin crawl in the last word. But Jay, you've had an opportunity to sit down with Marty and talk about, man, what was it, like 48 hours of terror? I guess is one of the things we could talk about. One of the kerfuffles, as he said, and we'll get right into that. And then come on back, we'll have some other fun as well as that tip we talked about a little bit more on episode 123 of the Blind Bargains Cast.
You're listening to the Blind Bargains Cast. Blind Bargains Cast.
Bargains Cast. Bargains Cast. Welcome back to Blind Bargains Cast 123. And talking about one of the big stories of the past week or so, there was a bit of drama, I guess you might call it, with our friends over at Blindfold Games. For a minute, we actually thought that Blindfold Games would cease to exist thanks to some policies by Apple. Thankfully, all is rectified now, and Marty's 80 Blindfold Games are living on and going to keep expanding. So we brought Marty Schultz back on the show to tell us about everything that happened and some of the latest games. So Marty, welcome back to Blind Bargains.
Well, thanks again for inviting me. To jump right into this whole kerfuffle that happened.
That's a good word.
About 3 weeks ago, I submitted some updates for Blindfold Hopper, Blindfold Craps, and Blindfold Horse Race. And all three were rejected by Apple because they have a new rule relating to spam as a way to reduce a lot of the duplication in the App Store. And the reason they rejected them is they said these three apps look identical. From now on, if you have identical apps and they only differ in the content that they download from the web, you have to kind of merge them into one app. And I write back to them, these three apps are actually different. If you had looked at the user guide to play the game, you'd realize one is a horse race game that you run race your horse on the screen by walking your fingers on the screen. The next is like the casino game Craps, and the third is like the old arcade game called
Not Apple. The same at all. If they were sighted games, they would look totally different.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they write back to me and they say, basically, no, these games are identical. Please, and they repeat the same thing. And I write back, no, if you simply run the games and start seeing it, you'll see they're different. The only thing that's really the same about the games is the menu system, the help screen, and the setting screens are all identical. And I do that to make the learning curve.
Right, you copy them over. That makes total sense.
Yeah. So they say that they'll get back to me in 3 to 5 days. 10 days later, they get back to me, and I had a half-hour conversation with this guy, Adam, who feels that the game should be boiled down to a handful of apps. And I tell Adam, well, I can't do that because it's going to make the games much harder for people to play, and it's a lot of effort for really no return, because most of the people, when you launch a new app, people tend to pick up, either decide to get the app or not get the app in the first 3 months. So here we are 2 to 3 years later for a lot of these apps, and all we're going to do is annoy a lot of people, and there's no reason to expend this
effort. And if you're a large, say you are like a Hasbro, you wouldn't take all of your board game apps and put them into one big app. It just wouldn't make sense.
I tried explaining that to them, but it really fell on deaf ears. And I said, I don't really think this is a good idea. And I said, look, Adam, I'm not going to make this move. And I just want to understand what Apple's response is going to be. And I said, I want to confirm what you're saying. And what you're saying is I cannot release any updates for any of the apps, and I cannot release any new apps unless I merge these into a handful of apps. He said, yes. I said, well, I think a couple of my game fans are going to be kind of annoyed, and you might hear from them. So he said, well, you know, what happens, happens. And then at that point, I put the information out on the blog, out on my Twitter feed, and
it word exploded. Starts
spreading. Yes, it explode would be a polite way to say it. And it's just, I think I had thousands and thousands of hits on my blog. There were people, hundreds of people sent long paragraph-long messages to Apple's accessibility desk. Some key people over at the ACB and the NFB reached out to contacts they had. And then I think it was even a change.org petition went out, and hundreds of signatures on that. Wow. And then I get a call on Friday. I happened to fly up to New York for the weekend, and just as I was picking up my bags, I get another call from Adam. And he said, look, I feel bad about the way we left it the other day. My team and I, we went through a bunch of your apps, and we realized they are significantly different. We realized that there might be discoverability issues with the apps for people in the visually impaired world. You're one of the few people who are really building apps for that audience. So to narrow things down, we're okay with how you're doing it. He only asked that if I do new apps and there's an opportunity to merge multiple new apps, new games into one app, I should take a look at that. And I said, I can take a look at doing that, but before I make any move that's really different, I need it to run by my 50 testers who are either blind or have low vision across the world. And if they think it's a bad idea, I'm going to follow their recommendation. And he said, yes, that makes a lot of sense. So I have a lot of respect for Apple after this, because they realized that they needed to investigate the problem further. They did, and they came to a conclusion that benefits everybody. It benefits Apple because they maintain their leadership role in accessibility. It benefits me because I don't have to do a lot of useless work, and it benefits the blindness community because it allows me to continue building apps as opposed to wasting time following a silly rule.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm definitely glad that the apps are going to live on into the future. I just want to talk about the rule as it was designed. The way I see it, I think it's more intended for, say, someone who downloaded 1,000 public domain books and decides to create an app for each of individual book or something like that. Is that what you're feeling?
Or if somebody basically has built an app for each and every podcaster out there, and the only difference in the app is which podcast.
The URL, right, of the podcast. Yeah, right. And that makes a lot of sense. And I would guess that initially they're looking at code, and they see there's probably a fair amount of duplicate code between the apps because this is the way they operate. And probably some sort of bot initially flags the thing and thinks, oh, this is more similar, and it really took a bunch of prodding. And eventually, people actually looked at the apps, and once you dig down past the menus, of course, it's obvious they're quite different from each other.
Yeah, and he started opening up some of the apps, and he saw like Solitaire has built within it 25 different games. Domino has built within it like 15 different games. Spades probably has 7 different games. Basketball probably has about 10 different games in it. So, in essence, I'm kind of doing what they want, which is if the games are very similar and they're all kind of more and more levels of something or different variants of the same game, it's in its own app. But I'm not going to mix, a video game with a Scrabble game or something.
Do you feel that because of the circumstance, Apple made an exception for the rule that they felt you were breaking, or do you feel they realized that you actually weren't breaking the rule at all?
I think they realized I wasn't breaking the rule, and they realized that the rule was being misapplied.
That makes a lot of sense, right? Because, yeah, like we said, you know, text games especially, and these aren't all text games, there's all sorts of different types of games. It is probably easier, you know, without getting into too much of the weeds of how you program, though, but I'm sure, you know, it would be easy for someone to do a 2-minute glance, like, oh, it's the same menu, but they should know by the game titles. I mean, I'm definitely glad it was able to be worked out.
I think in the whole series, there's about 3 games that are real similar to each other. Like Breakout is a more complex version of Pong, and Juggle is a different variant of Pong. But that's really the only place where I was able to take one idea and turn it into 3 different games. But everything else, all the games are really unique.
And talking about the business aspects of all of that, where, you know, people were talking about, oh, why don't you just combine them? You mentioned on your blog that some people would say, well, if that's what Apple wants, that's what you should be doing. You should just bow down to them. And obviously, business-wise especially, that wouldn't have made sense.
Well, it wouldn't have made sense for a number of reasons. I actually published a blog about that today or yesterday about why combining the games is bad. And a couple of key issues come up here, which is one, there are people of varying cognitive abilities and mobility abilities that a lot of people in the blindness community forget that not everybody is expert on phones. Relating to that, there's something called a discoverability issue. It's the same type of thing where if a web page is up, sighted people will only look at the first page, of the first screen of the web page. Or if you look at the newspaper, you'll only read articles that are above the fold. Well, the same concept happens with the games, which is a lot of people will not scroll down the main menu to see what else is there. So if you have 7 different games, they're only going to see the games that are spoken by voiceover for what's on the initial screen, and they'll never scroll down and they'll never discover any of the other games that are with it. From a business perspective, Apple is really asking me to invest hundreds or thousands of hours to merging these games into one just to satisfy a kind of arbitrary rule. Worse yet, all these games have a unique ID, and when you do an in-app purchase, it relates to that specific ID. So if I merged all these games into one game, that game would now have a unique ID, and any of the in-app purchases you made would not be credited towards that game, so everybody would have to buy the games all over again.
And they wouldn't, for the most part. I mean, it really wouldn't.
Lots of what I call unintended consequences could come out of this very bad decision.
Does this whole experience make you think any differently about your methods for programming in the future, the types of games you're going to create, or how you might package them?
I will pay attention to see if games are related and it makes sense to put them in one app, I will. But if the games have nothing to do with each other, I'll keep going down the current path. And if anyone who complains I have published too many games, that's why I came out with one of the apps called Blindfold Games. It lets you pull up any game right from that menu, and then you can keep all your games hidden inside a folder somewhere, and you never have to worry about that again. And they keep the games organized in terms of which games you use most often. They'll be at the top of your list.
So we got a few minutes. Let's talk about some of the games that you have most recently. What's your favorite that you've developed in the past few months?
I would have to say the game I'm going to be releasing next is Name That Tune.
Oh, fun.
And that's going to be a really cool game because I worked with another division of Apple to be able to have access to these 30-second clips they have all over the iTunes store to preview music. So what I'll do is I'll give you a list of 4 different songs that this might be, and then you listen to the clip, and the sooner you can guess what the song is, the more points you get. And I have different packs for rock versus pop versus gospel and Christian and R&B and blues and jazz. And I break it out by the top 100 hits of, say, the past 40 years, or I break it out by decade. So there are like slews of different packs you can get based on where you like, what musics you're most familiar with.
I love the different styles of games you have, and especially, and you alluded to this, and I think the same blog post pretty recently, about some of the educational value of some of the games, your kind of Bop It-like game to teach gestures as an example. I thought that was a really cool approach.
Yeah, that was actually an idea from Ben Pomeroy over at the Braille Institute in LA when I visited him. And he's seeing more and more seniors who are losing their vision and still don't understand mobile technology. He said, can you build a game that's going to help seniors become more familiar with the gestures and help them practice their gestures? And I started putting it together, and I started testing with my testing group, and they love this game. And I actually looked at Zany Touch as well to see what they did to make their game so interesting, and I kind of took what they did and moved it up a few notches, and that game is great for both people new to the iPhone as well as people who just love playing one of these type of Bop-It games.
Another one kind of similar, a game where you, it's kind of like a Wheel of Fortune, but you're filling in letters and even Braille contractions all at once. That's really
cool. Yeah, I did Braille Spin and Solve, which will eventually be named Braille Jeopardy Match. And then, not Jeopardy, I'm sorry, Braille Fortune Wheel.
Yes.
And that I did as a joint project with Hadley, Hadley School for the Blind, because they wanted some way for their students to practice a lot of Braille contractions, and we kind of went around, should it be Hangman or should it be something else, and we realized this was great. So I had all, I think, 20,000 different phrases in the game. I used Duxbury software to translate that all into contracted Braille, and you can make the game have varying levels of complexity based on how many different contractions you want to test yourself with.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. Definitely a different approach to games like that. Of course, you got the lots of card games, sports games. What are the most popular, or what has been your most popular game all time?
Well, the game that has the most number of downloads is still Blindfold Racer, that has over 20,000 downloads. The second most popular is probably Blindfold Bowling.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the trivia games like Jeopardy Match and Blindfold Fortune Wheel, which is kind of like a Wheel of Fortune.
Do the ones with the most downloads also end up equating to the ones with the most paid purchases, or?
No. I mean, it tends to be, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would venture to say it's true, which is the same set of people buy all my stuff, and most of the people play, you know, an hour or two worth of the game, and then maybe they'll buy something again in the future, but I do have a loyal set of fans who will buy anything I produce as long as it's of the same quality as everything else.
And that's nice because most of them are, what, $3-$4?
It can vary. I mean, some of the games, if you buy every single upgrade of that game, can run as high as like $15 or $20.
Right.
But most of the games, the upgrades are like $2 to $5 or $2 to $4.
We're coming up on the holidays. Are you going to do any holiday sales or specials?
If I can just remember. But yes, that's not a bad idea. No. I want to eventually improve the infrastructure so people can make it easier. Now, what I'll probably do is I'll pick a couple of games and put a real sale on them. It's hard to do cross-game bundles within the App Store, but maybe I'll look at what game has been really popular with downloads but doesn't have a lot of sales, and I'll, you know, significantly drop the price on a couple of those games.
So you have your Name That Tune in the pipeline. Anything else exciting that you're working on in the coming months?
What else? People have been bugging me for the past year to do a slide puzzle. I just released that. I haven't officially
like those 15 number puzzles. Yeah, I remember those. Yeah,
that's there. I think I did a 15 number puzzle. I probably did a couple of other variants. Then there was something like Laplink out of BG Software. That ring a bell at all?
See, I mean, there's lots.
Yeah, but somebody said, can you do that? And I looked at what he did there. It was interesting. So I took it up another couple levels of complexity and added, made that available. That's coming out soon. Somebody was bugging me to do Word Cookie, which is real. She said a lot of her members of her family play Word Cookie, and it's like one of the number one word apps out on the App Store. So I did a variant of that. And right now I'm working on Piano Keys. Piano Keys is where you hold your phone in landscape mode, so your four fingers kind of land on the four areas of the phone.
Right.
And then when you tap one finger, that's one piano key. And then the music will play, and you have to kind of tap the key, the notes that are you're hearing, and it'll go faster and faster. I'll probably do a version with four fingers. Or four notes, another one of eight notes, where you have to move your finger up and down to get the top and bottom notes.
You have to over 80 games. Can you even remember all the games that you've done at this point?
No. The other one that I'm toying with, and I was talking to a podcaster yesterday about, is I'm going to do some variant of Angry Birds.
Where that'll be fun.
There'll be objects that you discover at the bottom of the screen, and then you move your by just moving your finger around, and then at the top of the screen, you move your finger back and forth, and when you tap the screen at the top, it'll drop down a bomb or an egg or something like that and destroy what's underneath it. And the idea is to destroy all the objects underneath you with the fewest number of bombs or eggs or whatever you want to call them. So you have to kind of figure out, you know, is this rectangle sitting next to a triangle? And if I kind of land in the middle, I can destroy both of them.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So, you know, holidays are coming up. It never hurts to ask for those iTunes gift cards because those can go a long way to get yourself several of these and waste lots of hours on bus, airplane, wherever you happen to be, in the middle of work, wherever you want to be. So some really cool stuff coming up, and glad to hear about it. Blindfoldgames.org, correct?
Yes, blindfoldgames.org. They can follow me at the Twitter, which is at blindfoldgames. And mm-hmm. anyone can send me an email to be marty@blindfoldgames.org.
And Marty is spelled?
M-A-R-T-Y.
M-A-R-T-Y. Awesome. And of course, people can send suggestions for new games and any other questions they have your way as well. Well, hey, we're definitely glad to hear that the games live on. It would definitely be a big void if they would have had to go away, for sure. So glad that things worked out, and hopefully helps Apple see the error, at least in the way the policy was applied. So definitely glad to see that, and glad to see the game.
I do want to thank everybody for the advocacy they put out there. I was just amazed. You know, I figured maybe 10 or 20 people would complain and then it would just kind of die off. But I literally heard from hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Did a lot of them copy you when they emailed Apple as well? Saw the email.
It's almost worth, you know, putting together a TED talk on this.
You know, I can see it. I mean, it's really an interesting story how it all, you know, and to be frank, that wouldn't have happened if you build up karma and goodwill over the years as you've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now. And, you know, because of the support that you have, you're able to pull that off. And when you need a little bit of help to make things happen, you have that network to do it. Yeah. So,
and anytime I get a negative comment from somebody, I will, you know, personally answer them. If they post something up negatively that I say, okay, a lot of people probably feel the same way, I'll actually write a blog about it. And I actually, the blog that's going to go out in the emails tomorrow really talks about, addresses the question of are some of the games too simple to play? And in the blog people will read, they'll say, well, if these games are really too simple for you and you'd prefer really complex RPG games, maybe you should think about learning how to program a computer. Because that's the next step. And maybe that would open up a career for some people.
That would be great. Hey, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. We really appreciate it and hope you have a great holiday.
Well, you too. And again, thanks for inviting me, and thanks to all your listeners.
We have more coming up on Blind Bargains Cast 123. But first, a tip.
It's here. It's here. It's finally here. We heard about it way back in May at Google I.O. And now, Jay, you can broadcast with your Google Assistant.
Ooh. Is Ricky home?
She is, and I can actually do that and bother them. In fact, we did it for dinner tonight. So what you would do is say your trigger word.
Right. And, we won't say it now.
We don't want to set anybody's thingies off. So, that sounded worse than I expected.
Maybe you should have said the trigger word.
maybe that would have been better. So you say the trigger phrase or word that you have, and then you actually then tell it broadcast. And then when you say broadcast, it starts recording whatever you're saying, and then it'll turn around and broadcast it to your Google Home or your other devices. So we have several here, and when I do it, it'll actually take that recording and put it on all the Google Homes and Chromecast in the house if I want it to let everybody know, like, it's time for dinner. Or when this podcast is finished, I'll let Ricky know that it's okay to turn the heater back on. So it's pretty neat. You can also do it from your phone, which is also wild. So if you wanted to say hi to your pets or something, you could actually broadcast. It'll go to all the stuff.
You don't have to be home. Your Google.
No, from what I understand, and I haven't tested this yet, but you're going to have the ability to do that from Google Assistant.
I could test it, but I don't have anybody at home
to be able to tell you whether you
did it correctly. Tell me if it worked.
Yeah.
I think sometimes somebody over, hey, maybe I call my landlord up, say, hey, can you go across to my house, and we're going to see if I can send you a message. Well,
then it's like that link that John Wesley Smith sent in about the Google, the Alexa device, there were German officials who had to go and raid a house because the Alexa came on and started running a German dance party all on its very own.
You could totally, if you have like a maid service or something like that, someone's going to be over at your house, you could totally freak them out and say the most.
Your thing started talking.
Just send messages to you.
Get out of the house now.
But it does work like an intercom. And
do they sync up? Like, are they pretty in sync when you heard it on the other?
It's pretty quick. So when I did it, it went upstairs and I could hear it through the floor. So I could hear my message come up to Ricky in the kitchen, and then I could actually hear her dictate back to me, and it was pretty fast. So the minute that it knows it, you've stopped talking, then it will go ahead and broadcast that, and you'll get the room ambient noise and everything. So you'll actually hear like the Google Home microphones from upstairs in the kitchen. You'll hear that on playback. Now there's an updated Google Home app coming. It's going to have some information coming for the Google Max and how to do some things with Bluetooth and stereo. That's still to come, but right now, as we're speaking, the broadcast feature is rolling out through your Google Home and Google Assistant application as we're speaking. So there's some interesting stuff going on there, as well as remember that it helps if you have already set up multiple users in your house. If you haven't done that already and you have multiple people using your Google Home to keep yourself from having drive-by Googling, go ahead and set up your voice assistant so it recognizes your voice. It's pretty simple and it won't get in the way with TalkBack or VoiceOver. So that's definitely another tip. If you haven't done that already, go ahead and set up your multiple voice profiles.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
So Jim Denham sent in an email, and also a few other people like Big Shirtless Ron, Edward Edwardson, Stephen Clower, and a few others sent in and said, "Hey, Joe, I really love what you did with that tip about having to find the Windows version of things. There's a lot of easier ways to do it." This is correct. You're absolutely right. Windows is awesome in that there's always 15 different ways to do one thing. And the way that I took people was through the menus and control panel or systems, and you go through that. There is, of course, you could do WinR and do it any number of other ways. The reason why I went the way I did is because if you're having to work with sighted people, I've found over the years, and this is maybe just me being biased, sighted people tend to work better in UI that they can click on or see or get a giant overview of. And command prompt sometimes freaks people out, or they just don't know how to type. I've run into that a couple of times, especially when I was at Gateway, when I was doing tech support back in the day, long time ago.
Yes, I like WinR myself. So it depends what you're trying to do. If I just want to figure out what version somebody's Windows is and I'm near their computer, I would just walk up to their computer. All right, where's your Windows key? WinR, and type in WINVER, as Jim and others pointed out. When you get that, you get the About Windows dialogue. So I go into, let's see, I'm in NVDA's screen review mode. So I have Microsoft Windows version 1703 OS build.
Uh-huh.
You know, that doesn't really matter to most people.
You're old.
1703, what is that? The spring one, right? I just haven't been
done this one. No, 1709, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I haven't done the fall. I haven't done the...
I can't tell you because I'm actually on the Redstone 4 on this machine. So I would tell
well,
you
so below
I'm actually
that.
On a version that's higher. I know I should. But I'm,
below
I'm
that, doing I get the
Xbox testing too, so it's all jumbled testing. In my head. So much
it testing. It says the Windows 10 Pro operating system and its user. Well, that tells me I'm Windows 10 Pro.
So there you go. So
the thing I don't get here is my serial number. So that right. is nice to have in some instances.
Your product to
get your
key.
Serial number. And the way you did that would get me the serial number. So
right. And RAM yeah. and processor.
Right. So it's partially, I do actually think... I'd have to look it up. I'm pretty sure there's a WinR command to get that screen as well.
Probably.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, you know, well, somebody will chime in and tell us what it is.
Well, that's it. And think of your family members. If you're trying to walk somebody else through it, it's usually better if you can kind of sort of take them to settings. So, you know, if I was going to do it completely visually, like if I was working with somebody over tech support, click start, then click the settings
down at
the
bottom left.
And then
I get why you say that. Uh-huh. Like, my family members can find keys on a computer keyboard. You know, if I say press the
yeah,
you,
sure.
You don't have to call it the logo key or whatever. You know,
Oh, now you're really making me dream of my old days of tech support. Would you like to know about how to reset your destination system, JJ? I could tell you all about that. You get your Gateway disk version 4.3 and load that up. That's the first time I've ever actually set with computer company.
No, I don't. No, I'm moving on. I'm moving on.
Okay.
We got an email, which we thought we really liked, and we ended up turning it into a guest blog from Alex Hall. And I'll let you expound on this because you started it.
Yeah. So this ball got rolling because I went to the Apple store. Ricky and I went to the Apple store just recently to, I'm actually going to get an Apple TV for my mom for Christmas to be able to give her something other than the Xbox to use for Netflix. So this will be much easier. Again, back to that visual thing. And the iPhone X's were there, and there wasn't a crowd of people around them, which I thought was really interesting. So we went up and, you know, fondled them, for lack of a better term. And as I said to Victor Sarin on Twitter, the first thing I did when I picked it up and held it was I thought it was an Android phone. I literally started to do talkback gestures. I kid you not, man. It was like, this feels like an Android phone. Here I go doing talkback. And of course, it's not. It's, you know, the iPhone X with the, you know, all bezel-less screen, blah, 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 blah. I was not impressed, as, you know, I have an iPhone 8 Plus here, and I just am super happy with that form factor. And I don't know, a home button. And so my feeling seeing it in person, because that's always the thing, you know, if you hold it, it changes your mind. That's always the magic aha moment with Apple. I didn't feel that way. And in fact, I felt the same way I did about the touch bar. I felt like there was a loss of functionality. I feel like Apple is trying to sell us a user interface that's half-baked, that's not completely together, and also using what little it has in the reality distortion field to get people to come along and help them go through the growing pains of this first new iteration of their new phone, aka Apple Watch, Apple TV, what have you. So I kind of said that on Twitter in a roundabout sort of way in a conversation, and Alex was reading these comments in which I had said that, you know, this is about Apple finding the ability to have less friction points. The headphone jack was a removal because it's a repair point. And not only that, they sort of pay for the headphone jack and how that works. We've talked about that on the show before. But a lot of these decisions aren't necessarily Steve Jobs' war on buttons. It is basically Apple finding ways to make things less repairable, less easy to reverse engineer. And moreover, it's cheaper for them, not having to do all this extra work or have all these extra moving parts, the home button especially. Renee Ritchie has talked about this on MacBreak Weekly a lot. So where I come down to this is, are you a Paul McCartney fan? Are you a John Lennon fan? Or are you a Beatles fan? And what I mean by that is, I like the Beatles. People have told Jay and I for years when we were doing Android accessibility shows and that, like, you just, it'd be so much easier if you just come over to Apple. Don't you understand? You should be using an Apple device. Why are you banging your head into this wall? Okay, so I've got that here. Actually, I've had Mac and Apple devices since 2010, but I have it. And now everybody's telling me, oh, you're a Luddite. Why aren't you moving on to change? Why won't you accept this? No, because I like what I've learned and I'm very comfortable with this. So I don't want to hear Wings right now. I don't want to hear Double Fantasy from John Lennon. I want to hear the Beatles. And that Beatles was Johnny Ive, Steve Jobs, and Tim Cook, and the rest of the cats. That's not this band anymore. This does not feel like a device like that. This feels very much a weird device. And when I saw an interview recently with Johnny Ive where he said, we can change the entire UI at any time or any place and make it feel new again because there's no buttons. We're not held back by physical constraint design. I immediately thought, oh crap, that's like going to be a training nightmare for those of us in assistive technology. And that's where I am with this.
So Alex makes a point too, I mean, which is, I think, very valid. That, you know, a lot of these devices, well, of course, we know this, they're not made for us, and an accessibility concern issue, etc. You know, yes, it would be easier for a blind person probably to have a home button. It would be easier to have a physical keyboard, back the old Nokia phones or some of the others, or the early Androids. But Apple decided to get rid of these things, and many of the things that they have decided have caught on. Hell, even the headphone jack, sadly, is catching on as a thing that now others are following them on to get rid of. And the headphone jack is something that a lot of blind people and others can benefit from. And Alex is like, oh, yeah, you know, that's just kind of how it is, even the touch bar on the Mac. But Apple does do, and I have to agree with this, they do as good of a job usually as they can with taking what the hardware people give them, the design people, the accessibility people do a good job of making that as accessible as humanly possible, whether, you know, whether it is new gestures on the touch bar on the Mac, whether it's different ways to access Siri and the app switcher and other things that you lost when you lost the home button. They've compensated
you
for that.
Probably. The Android X, the iPhone Android X, because that's what this thing is. It is when you tell me that I have to do this gesture to bring up the app switcher, or I have to do this now to bring up home or what have you. The fact, and I said this on last week's episode, the Apple Vis article, where I giggled because it says, you know, using Explore by Touch or using this gesture to do this action, when it used to be the home button. You know, and you
yes,
said to
but
me,
the home button only did a couple things, and like the big one. Honestly, pressing the home button to go to the home screen is not a big deal. You could, there's other ways to do that.
Depending on the use case and how you learned or who trained you. And now we're back to JAWS and the down arrow and using table commands. If your trainer was lazy and didn't teach you table commands, then you just use down arrow and then you're like, well, gosh, this stinks, or there's got to be an easier way.
That's not JAWS's fault. That's the trainer's fault.
Well, okay, but same point. You know, when you get an Apple iPhone X, they offer you 30 minutes of free training in the Apple store. It takes that way to get people to come along board. Now, if you like diet soda and you want to convince somebody else to drink diet soda, one of the things people have said to me over the years is, no, you just got to get used to it, Jay. If you drink it for 2 or 3 weeks, you'll get accustomed to the taste. No, not necessarily. Maybe I don't want to. You know, Victor Reader Stream users have this debate all the time with people with iPhone or people who say, I don't need the Galaxy barcode reader because I have Seeing AI now. We say on this show, it's great to have choice. What I don't like is being forced down the barrel of a gun and told, this is the way you're going to do it. Not necessarily. I mean, I've touched the phone. It's not for me. And that's all I'm saying is if
and you're you not, like though, this phone, Apple has, cool. But you're not being forced down. Apple has more iPhones than they've ever had, which is its own thing. But I mean, now
I was going to say, you actually. Yeah.
But I mean, see, in this case, that now becomes a good thing. You can still get a reasonably fast iPhone with a headphone jack. You can get iPhones with a home button. You can get iPhones with a fingerprint reader. Uh-huh. So and, you have at least at this
come
point.
Back, but here's the thing, right? Steve Jobs would have hated that. There's the famous story in the book where he sat in a meeting and he came down and changed it and flipped over the board and drew, you know, the grid down the middle and said four sections and this is all we do. He believed that the illusion of choice sold the product. And that if you have forced choice, it's something different. Where I really come down to is this. You're talking about a $1,000 to $1,400 phone, not including AppleCare, not including a case, not including a rapid charger or whatever else you want this thing to do. And like I said before, that's a 14-cell Braille display, which you may or may not be buying every year from now on because prices of phones are going up. They're not getting cheaper. Apple wants to be a boutique vendor because, again, they sell hardware, not software. So knowing who this is, like we had a conversation about security, and some people believe that they're buying an Apple phone for the ability to have a more secure life because they don't want to be on Google. They don't want to be on Facebook. They don't want to be on Amazon, what have you. You know, Google says you are the product. Google is selling your information. Yeah, guess what? I've been selling information to people ever since I worked at Radio Shack and asked you for your ID for a battery. Whatever.
That's why I gave you 12345 as my zip code.
So my deal here is that I'm not interested in supporting Apple on this trip. And I will buy an iPad with a home button next year before they change it, as the rumors are saying. So I have that last experience that I'm wanting to have. The same way I'll buy a Victor Reader Trek because I don't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night and feel around on a piece of glass to hit pause.
And eventually you'll adjust because I held on. I mean, how long did I hold on to Android keyboard phones? And eventually I realized, you know what?
What I can tell you will probably happen is I'll just go back to Android. Because if you keep making an iPhone, an Android phone, I will just go back to Android, which won't hurt my feelings at all as being my daily driver.
Nor will it hurt Apple's because their stock price is through.
Let me tell you, one guy saying no to the night and get off my lawn is totally going to affect a $250 billion in cash company. Let me tell you.
Go to blind bargains and Yeah.
I'll throw it up there on the classifieds. But this is the debate that's happening also at convention in Houston. I'm sure you heard something about this at NFB convention, in state convention. You saw people who are not us, who are not people who listen to this program. You saw people who are not very technical minded. And think about them. You know, they'd be happy with that flip phone you were just talking about that's coming from Nokia. So, I mean, there's a certain segment, and I think that's the most important thing to take away from this conversation, what you said, which is different use case, different styles, and Apple is offering these styles to everybody. There could be maybe the SE is their retro classic phone. Maybe that's their version of the flip phone going forward. If so,
well, they have lots of those parts left. They're going to keep selling them. So
yes.
Alex's blog post is up there at blindbargains.com. And we definitely appreciate him leasing us his
great rebuttal, by the way. This was a really good debate, and it was really interesting, but he didn't want to take it in Twitter, so he wrote this out in log form very well.
Because you only get 280 characters in Twitter.
That's true. It would have to be of 16. Continued.
Oh, guys, stop. No, stop. By the way, in Houston, shout out to the customer who bought an iPhone 4S screen protector. I haven't sold one of them in like 3 years.
Well, I need to warn you that a lot of apps are starting to have iOS 8.0 as their cutoff now.
They said, I'll start. Be prepared. Yeah. They said, I think they could use 8 on the 4S.
Like, I think so too.
Keep using it until the phone breaks. I'm like, you realize it's not updated. Like,
that's
going to
be soon.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah. Anyway. I thought I was behind the times. Okay. So continuing on the conversational point here, the audio stuff that we've talked about, this is just a kind of a flip back to the cassette and the other conversations we've had real quick. There's an interesting article that I have here, The Last Word, about hidden tracks and the rise and fall, and that digital distribution kind of killed the hidden track. And I agree. It was cool to have those kinds of audio where you would put it in your CD or you would give it to a friend and you'd be listening in the car and then you would think it'd stop. And then all of a sudden, like 35 seconds of silence and here comes a song, or
you forgot to take it out of the player and then it just goes, right? And then, or it's like track 90. If you rip one of those, sometimes they'll pop up. Sometimes they're actually in the last track, or sometimes it will show up as like track 99 or something with 80 blank tracks in the middle.
Yeah, so, and you're like, what do you mean? Why do I have all these dead files? Did something go wrong?
Nope, it really is the
The CD. Or if you're really unlucky, it's like track 57, and then they put another one on track 72. Right. So there were like two like that, like Queen did that once, I think, with It's a Kind of Magic, if I remember right. So there's weird things like that can happen. Devo, I think, did it too. The thing I did bring to Last Word, and staying with the musical idea, is how about this? Take a listen to this. You won't forget this for a while. I believe it's Disturbed that saying, you will never forget the sight of 10,000 geese in the air. Actually, it's fists, but 10,000 geese flying all at once. That is just like Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds times a couple of thousand. That is just freaky.
I still want to combine this with the mouse traps.
Would that be funny? Patrick, he gave you a challenge.
I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but well, if not, you can go back to whatever episode that was and hear the
clip of
the mouse traps going off at once.
It's a lot less painful than the mouse traps, but might be more bird residue with this one than the mouse traps. Just saying.
Oh my God.
Look out for your car.
I have one for you. It's not music. Uh-huh. Actually, it's internet related. So not food. No food. Really? No, music. Actually, it's tech related. No cats. Could have some relation to Nigeria and the sum of money that you've just inherited.
Oh, how is my friend the prince?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's about to send you $50 million, but you just have to give him your bank account information. And you want to set up a thing with him. You may have seen this. Yeah. This story, what you could do with him. A service called Rescam. And here's what you do. It's an AI bot. Forward your emails from Nigeria to get the address here. me@rescam.org, R-E-S-C-A-M.org. And a bot will pick this up and they will start writing emails back and forth with the spammer, thus monopolizing all their time and hopefully keeping them from actually doing any scamming.
This is like those audios you'll hear of people who actually mess with the people who call you to tell you your Windows has problems, you know, when they start the fake tech support people and then they start scamming the fake tech support people. It's an interesting way to deal with this. I like the plan here. It's the best use of a bot in quite some time, I'll tell you that.
It's supposed to be some pretty good AI, and too, like, you know, it's one of those that it'll examine the conversations and respond to it. I mean, it's done by security firm, of course.
That's crazy.
One of the examples that they have on a video is like, yes, I'll give you this bank account information, but for security, I'll have to email it to you one number at a time. And they start sending, I'll just email four, send. And the bot writes back, or the scammer writes back, well, that's not necessary. And it just writes back, seven.
Oh, that's good. Now if we can only... Now you're just making me think of Family Guy again with the lottery numbers.
We already referenced that somewhere else. Two sailboats.
Man, there is so much more to come before the end of the year. Just when I think, and maybe I'm jinxing us, just when I think we're able to start wrapping up those stories and starting to put together our ballots for our BBQ crew to go through and vote, more stories happen, or kerfuffles, as you might have heard on this particular program.
Kerfuffles.
But we're still interested to hear what you think is the biggest kerfuffle of the year. Send that on into, of course, feedback@blindbargains.com. And we'll add that into the pile as we start to turn the home stretch corner into what is the end of 2017. Now, you were talking about the Black Friday show. Man, that's coming up really quick.
Black Friday is coming up. So, yeah, we have hopefully some stuff coming in the Black Friday stuff. Might have some really special stuff, and I guess we'll just wait and see what unfolds. Mm-hmm. But there's some interesting things developing. Yes, that should be the next one. So we'll be on the lookout for that, 124, and you can do some holiday shopping with some of your favorite merchants. Of course, AT Guys will be in that as well. You can start getting some stuff from atguys.com and check out some of our latest technology as well. And we will have some sales, as we often do, around Black Friday. We will talk about them and, of course, some of our other favorite vendors as well. So definitely look forward to that in 124. You know, the best way to keep up with this podcast is to subscribe. So whether you're on iTunes or you're on the podcast app on iOS or you're on Podcast Addict on Android or others or on Stitcher, TuneIn, a million others, you can just subscribe to us, like us, whatever button they have, and you can get the latest episodes downloaded to your device automatically or auto-magically. So that's definitely...
There you go. There's that term. You know, episode 126 is going to be a happy one for Jay, because that means there will be a week where I'm not tweeting as much until I figure out the automated tweet situation. But in the meantime, he can suffer along with anybody else who's interested by following me at twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word. You will be able to find out some of the information that shows up on this show possibly a little sooner than this show. And of course, you can always get the information that we do have in the show, usually in recording order, by going over to blindbargains.com and then clicking on the old podcast tab and heading down to this particular episode 123.
123. You can email us feedback@blindbargains.com. You can tweet us @blindbargains as well. And of course, you can leave comments right on the show note pages or any news story or deal post that we do over at Blind Bargains. Just leave a comment and we will put those up and share them with the world. So definitely thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Marty.
Question before we go. Pumpkin pie or mince meat?
Pumpkin pie.
Mince meat or pumpkin pie?
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie? Okay.
Pumpkin pie.
Just checking. I just wanted to see where you stood on this particular issue.
I stand with pumpkin pie all year round.
Do you know their pumpkin pie Pop-Tarts?
No, just a pumpkin pie. I don't think I want
pumpkin pie Pop-Tarts. Okay, no, you're not going to string that over that into exists? Something else. Like, yep, as well as Toll House cookie dough.
See, the problem with pumpkin pie is there are too many pumpkin pies that are just made with too much, I think that's nutmeg and other things. It's just,
I did give myself a shudder when I thought about mincemeat Pop-Tarts just for a second. That was not a good thought. So Instacart updated, and these are the things that can happen when I'm testing for accessibility.
I don't see this. Oh, wait. Do they have them on ship? No, I don't know if I see. I do not see them.
They were limited edition. You should have jumped on that. Did you jump on Thin Mint cereal?
No, I save it all for you.
Oh, okay, good. Bye, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving-ish kind of thing.
Bye, everybody. Oh, yeah, thanks. That's what I was trying to do before we got into pumpkin pie. Thanks, Marty Schultz, for coming on blindfoldgames.org. You can get all those games, which are continuing to exist, and you can search for them on the App Store as well. And thanks, Patrick, for dealing with this audio.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening to this particular podcast, possibly while you're eating pumpkin pie or mincemeat. We're inclusionary around here.
I'm not.
That's all right. Sweet. So all the mincemeat for anybody else but Jay.
Sweet potato pie, sure. Not mint, no.
Oh, I'm out. Goodbye.
Have a good week, folks. See you next time.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.
Gee, Oscar, that was lovely.
It was? How embarrassing.